Okay, now we're going to start Hilchot Deot, chapter 6, paragraph. This is a tough topic, I want you to know. And we'll raise it as an issue, but we're going to need some time to talk about this. This chapter, more than any other parak that we've studied till now in Hilchot Deot, is really about how you develop healthy relationships with others. Okay? The mistakes that we make, the things that we can do, the responsibility we have in those relationships. So he starts like this. Derech b'riyato shel adam liot nimshach b'deyotav u'b'masav achar re'av v'chavirav v'noheg k'minhag anshei medinato. There's a natural tendency in human beings to follow the mass, to do that which all others do. And the closer that circle of others is to you, the more strong the pull to do as they do. Okay? And that on the one hand is gift, and it's a bracha. On the other hand, it creates a tremendous challenge. So if you had to pick the pro and the con of that fact, okay, I'll give you a great example, by the way. If you went to learn in the mirror, okay, and in the mirror, everybody wears black pants and a white shirt and a black velvet kippah. If you learned in the mirror, unless you had some principle that you were going there in order to show them that a person can learn Torah with a different type of, let's say, kippah, if you showed up there one day in shorts and a t-shirt, right, like a tank top shirt and a pair of shorts, right, and you went to sit and learn, but you would eventually, I'm sure they would let you in because they think it was like Baal Tshuva or whatever, but you wouldn't be able to do it for an extended period of time because the pull, and I see this all the time. In fact, I just saw this week. There's there's like a rule when you do, you know, reserves in the army. One of the challenges as an officer, it's not like when you're in the regular army, everybody's signed up for 3 years. If anybody doesn't obey the rules, doesn't obey an order, so that's it. You know, you can do what you want. You can force them to stay in for Shabbat, or you can, you know, give them extra guard duty, or you can send them to a court-martial and he can get jail time and anything you want, right? But when you're in military, it's not so simple. Because you get guys and they're in their 30s, 40s, and some of them are veterans of wars, and obviously if somebody does something outrageous, but a guy doesn't do the simplest thing. Like, let's say everybody's supposed to wear their shirt buttons closed. You walk around the base, supposed to be in a uniform, right? Discipline. So let's say there's a guy and he's wearing his shirt and his buttons are open. So you say, listen, close your shirt, just naturally do that, right? And in some reserve units, they don't bother. They just, it depends on the officers, doesn't whatever. And let's say you tell the guy, listen, close your shirt, and he doesn't close his shirt. You tell him the second day he doesn't close his shirt, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to tell him he can't go home? You're not going to tell a guy he's married with children he's not going home because he didn't do his shirt? That's ridiculous. And if you did do something dumb like that, then you'd win the battle and you'd really lose the war. Because if word got around the unit that you kept the guy back from his family for Shabbat or something like that because he didn't do up a shirt, they'd think you were ridiculous and you'd be done. Right? And I learned over the years in reserve duty that you don't have to get everybody to do it. What you have to do is decide what your red lines are and be sure that the mass of soldiers are doing it. And as the mass of soldiers are doing it, the rest of the guys get swept along. You start with a new reserve duty unit or new guys come and they'll show up in all sorts of ridiculous looking postures. But as they see that everybody in our unit kind of, has their uniform, right? And does what they're supposed to do. Then everybody else comes along and you let go of the things you let go of and you stand by the things you can stand by. There's a very strong pull to peer pressure, right? If you're amongst a group of guys that never curse, you will eventually stop cursing. No one will ever have to say a word. You'll just see that they're uncomfortable when you curse. And you'll see that there's some value to it. And you'll eventually let go. And on the other hand, if you're hanging out, and I see this when I go to Milim. Now I'm in a different kind of unit. When I was in my old army unit, so when I would come back from Milim, I felt like I needed a day in the base manager just to clean my thought process. Because that's all you hear for 30 days. Guys telling dirty jokes and cursing and whatever else it is. And it takes its toll on you, right? So peer pressure is a very powerful thing. Now, what do you do with that? What do you do with that? So if you think about that, that means that peer pressure is a tool. And you get to decide whether that tool, and everybody gets affected by peer pressure, everybody. Doesn't matter how cool you think you are or how ahead of the pack you are, you will be affected. Look around your university when you get there next year and you will find that there are certain simple trends. Take note of them and you'll see that you fall into them. Whether it's dress, language, timing, whatever else. There's some places, everybody gets to places on time. You'll start to get there on time. If you walk into your college class, and there's 60 people in the class, and the first day it's a 10 a.m. class, and the first day you get there at 10:05, and everybody's already in their seats, you'll start to get there on time. Right? And it doesn't do with the professor. Right? If you, in the same class, if at 10:05 there's like two people there, and everybody filters in at 10:10, 10:15, 10:20, you will gradually stop getting there at 10, even if the professor starts with only two people in the room. Right? Because you get drawn by what the mass does. So now that can be a blessing, can be a curse. You can decide then which mass, which group you're going to insert yourself into, precisely because you know that they're going to influence you. By the way, if you wanted an example of the difference between, let's say, a Jewish environment and a secular environment, this is the best example you can think of. I mean, there are pros and cons to going to any university and going to IU. But there's no doubt that in certain circles in YU, and you can be plenty secular in YU too, but if you are in a certain circle of people in YU, you're going to be drawn Jewishly in directions. You just won't get drawn if you're in, Dartmouth, right? That's just the way it is, right? It's a conscious decision. There are other things you get out of going to Dartmouth. You have to make that decision, but just be aware of that. So that's what the Rambam says here. The Rambam says, L'fichach tzarich adam lihitchaber letzadikim v'leishevetz ala chachamim tamid k'dei shiyilmad mimaseihem. Therefore, a person has to try to be connected to tzaddikim, to sit sort of in the presence of chachamim, of Torah scholars, always. Because you'll learn from what they do, and you'll be influenced by what they do. And because everybody around them is learning from what they do, you'll even be influenced by the environment. Right? And by the way, don't think that this is like just a YU versus, a WashU question. Because even when you go to, let's say, WashU, whatever it might be, there are different environments you can put yourself into. And if you decide that you want to be drawn in a certain environment, and the hardest thing about this, and we'll finish with this, is sort of what do you do when you realize you're actually being drawn in a direction that you didn't want to be drawn? That's when it gets difficult. So how to do this and what that means, that we'll get into, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, food for thought. Let's get to a finally started Perek Vav.